worker. But there was something smarmy about this guy, no matter how gorgeous he was. With Clementine on my mind, I spent the next few hours taking care of business at the inn. Shelley nabbed me when I passed through the dining area. "I just took 3 pumpkin raviolis with sage sauce down to your office for lunch. Clementine is there with your grandmother." As if she understood, Trixie stood on her hind legs and gazed at Shelley with desperate eyes. "Don't worry, little Trixie. There's a doggy version for you, too." Trixie wagged her tail and raced along the corridor toward the office. "How could she know?" I asked. Shelley shrugged. "Beats me. They understand a lot more than we realize. Or maybe she smells the food." I joined Oma, Clementine, and Trixie in the office. The sun had burned through the clouds, turning it into a beautiful fall day. Lunch had been set up on the small terrace outside, complete with an orange tablecloth and matching purple napkins printed with orange jack-o'-lanterns. Clementine was carrying Twinkle Toes in her arms upside down, like a baby. I could hear her purring. "I'm so glad you came. I think I'm suffering from mommy syndrome. It's a treat for me to talk with adults, not to mention to eat with people who don't throw their vegetables." Oma placed a gentle hand on Clementine's arm. "Enjoy these years, Liebling. They all go too fast." "I'm sure they do. It's tough herding triplets, though, especially 2 rowdy boys." We were about to take our seats at the table when Mr. Huckle entered carrying a tray laden with beverages. Clementine rushed toward him. "Mr. Huckle!" She waited until he set the tray on the buffet, but when he turned around, she embraced him, sobbing. Their affection for each other was so evident that my eyes welled up, too. Now, Miss Clementine, we don't make scenes in public." But no sooner was his back to us than he reached into a pocket for a handkerchief to wipe his own eyes. He served hot coffee and iced tea while Trixie ran in frantic circles, impatiently waiting for her food. Mr. Huckle served Trixie and winked at Clementine before he left. "I miss him so much," Clementine sniffled. "I think it broke Daddy's heart to let him go." She looked at Oma. "Thank you for giving him a job. At his age, not many people would have taken a chance on him."
"He is wonderful," Oma gushed. "The guests love him, and he's very classy in his uniform. It takes the whole inn up a notch, yes?"
We caught up a little bit, with Oma asking questions about Clementine's children. In typical nosy fashion, she asked in a matter-of-fact, conversational way,
"Your husband, he was having an affair with another woman?"
Ouch! Nothing like coming right out and putting it on the table. Clementine speared a piece of ravioli. "That's all behind me now." Deftly avoided Clementine. But Oma didn't give up.
"Holly tells me that a man is following you."
"Oh, it's nothing."
Oma focused on her and waggled a finger.
"Your father is away, and you need our help. Now you be truthful with me, Clementina."
Clementine beamed at her.
"No one has called me that in, gosh, over a decade."
"Don't change the subject. What is the story with this man? Who is he and what does he want with you?"
Clementine glanced at me. I just grinned. She clearly wasn't used to Oma's no-holds-barred interrogation style. I took another bite of the fabulous ravioli. I wasn't about to step in to save Clementine from Oma, though. The man was following her, and that couldn't be a good thing. I waited for her response, concentrating on the creamy pumpkin ravioli filling, which didn't seem like it should go with the savory sage sauce, but the combination was delicious.
"Oma," said Clementine, "don't make a fuss. He's simply someone I used to date. You probably had a lot of admirers. You must know what it's like."
"I still have admirers."
We all burst out laughing. But I was thinking how cleverly Clementine had distracted Oma by turning the subject to her. Oma sipped her coffee.
What is this man's name?
Clementine blinked too many times before answering.
Russell Lake?
18. Bad timing. I had just taken a swig of iced tea when Clementine lied about the name of her stalker. I choked and coughed. Oma raised an eyebrow. Clementine looked at me with alarm, and I knew it wasn't because she was afraid I couldn't breathe. I assured them I was fine, which gave Oma license to return to the subject of the mysterious Russell Lake, or Parker Colby, whoever he was.
"Why do you hide from this man?" Oma demanded.
"Oma, I have all I can handle right now. The divorce has only been final for a few months. The last thing I need is a romance. Is that jaded of me? Maybe I am a little bit sour on romance now. My children and my father come first."
"You are afraid of this Russell."
Clementine paused too long.
"Then I will call Dave. You will stay here at the inn with us."
"I couldn't do that, really."
"I have two bedrooms," I said. "I could bunk with Oma. You and the kids could have the run of my apartment."
"We couldn't. It's very kind of you to offer."
Oma gazed at Trixie. "Do you have a dog?"
"I do." Clementine seemed relieved that the topic of conversation had changed. "Star Baby. She's from one of Babalicious's litters."
"Too bad you did not bring her with you today."
"Dad took her to the show."
Poor Clementine uttered those words without realizing that she had walked right into Oma's trap.
"Then you must stay here with us."
"Oh, no." I was so eager to help Clementine that it hadn't dawned on me that the inn wasn't the safest place for her. "Oma, I'm afraid Russell is a guest of the inn."
Oma's fork fell to the stone terrace with a clank.
"What?"
Clementine turned toward me in shock and confusion. I picked up Oma's fork. Oma clasped her hands to her cheeks.
"Nothing like this has ever happened before in all the years that I have run this inn. Nothing."
Mr. Huckle appeared in the doorway with a fresh fork.
"Begging your pardon, madam, but I will gladly go to stay with Miss Clementine and the children."
"But..." He stopped Clementine before she could say more.
"It would be my pleasure. You are like a daughter to me. I like to think that if I had had a daughter, she would have been exactly like you, Miss Clementine. I shan't leave you alone in your hour of need."
He turned to Oma.
"Shall I serve dessert now, madam?"
What a sneaky old fellow. I bet there wasn't much going on in the inn that he didn't know about. Our lunch ended on a high note, but when Clementine took her leave, I made a point of escorting her out. Trixie went with us.
"Thanks for making up that story about Russell Lake staying here."
I laughed out loud. No wonder she was confused. "But he is, under a different name." Clementine's face flushed red when she realized she'd been caught.
"Holly, I'm sorry I lied. Is he really bunking at the inn?"
"I'm afraid so."
"What's his name?"
"You honestly don't know?"
"Please, you saw right through that."
"Trixie is a Jack Russell, and we were sitting out near the lake. Russell Lake."
"I gather that means he's not an old boyfriend."
Clementine stared down the pedestrian zone.
"You and Oma are dear friends. You can't imagine how much I hated lying to you."
Clementine folded her arms across her chest.
"I came back to Wagtail to escape something terrible. The kids and I need a fresh start. I don't want my personal troubles all over town. I don't want to be that woman. I don't want people feeling sorry for me or whispering when I pass by. And most of all, I don't want my children growing up and hearing the whispers and the rumors and living with the shame."
I could understand that. I wasn't one to broadcast all my personal problems either. It sounds like a terrible divorce. She held one hand over her forehead.
"You can't begin to imagine."
I let it go. I didn't want to pry. He registered under the name of Parker Colby.
Do you think your husband sent him?
She finally met my eyes.
We'll be fine with Mr. Huckle. We'll be just fine.
I wasn't so sure about that. Mr. Huckle was a sweet old man, but somehow I doubted that he was much protection. She picked up my hand and gave it a squeeze.
This is why I came home to Wagtail. People look out for each other here.
She gasped.
Isn't it ironic that I don't want people in town to know my troubles, yet I expect them to protect me and my children?
She ducked down the little passageway lined with bushes and hopped into a golf cart driven by Mr. Huckle. Trixie and I returned to reception. We had barely entered when Oma said,
I know every guest in this inn. There is no Russell Lake. The guest who follows Clementine, is he a ghost hunter?
It's Parker Colby.
No,
whined Zelda.
It couldn't be. He's so dreamy. He wouldn't be that scuzzy. There must be a mistake.
Oma's lips pursed.
You always like the bad boys, Zelda. You should make a point of looking for nice men.
Not all gorgeous men are bad to the bone, she protested. You and Felix make a cute couple, I said. Oma glanced up from the computer.
You, my Liebchen, have the reverse problem. You must break away from the boring studious types, like your ex-boyfriend. Has he called you yet?
No, I really don't expect him to call. It's over, Oma.
Did he help you pack?
No.
Humph. It's a good thing you broke off that relationship. I'm glad to see him go.
I have our Mr. Colby here. He is from New York City.
Zelda peered at the computer.
He doesn't sound like a New Yorker. If you'd said he was from Texas, I might have believed you.
The three of us will keep an eye on him, yes? And I will notify Officer Dave.
Oma, Clementine doesn't want that. She said she came here for a fresh start and doesn't want the whole town knowing about her shameful troubles with her husband.
Shameful? She has nothing to be ashamed of if her husband betrayed her.
I think it might be worse than that. She doesn't want people feeling sorry for her.
So it's like that, is it? An abusive husband, you think? That's still nothing to be ashamed of. However, I understand her desire not to be pitied. I would feel the same way.
Oma looked from me to Zelda.
The first sign of trouble, and we notify Officer Dave. Agreed?
The phone rang, and Oma answered. When she hung up, she asked,
Would you mind giving Shelley a hand with the ghost hunters, since Mr. Huckle has gone to help Clementine?
I'm on it. Trixie's nails clicked on the hardwood floor as she hurried along the corridor with me. The apparition apprehenders had gathered in the dogwood room, the open sitting area next to the grand staircase. Felix was leaning back on a sofa with his eyes closed, but he held a mug on his lap. Brian perched next to him, jazzed and energetic. Casper lay quietly at their feet. Eva walked Mrs. Muir toward us. Twinkletoes, who had been watching from the staircase, scampered toward Mrs. Muir, hissed at her, and dashed away. Some feline ambassador she was. Shelley handed me a pot of coffee. The ghost hunters are having an impromptu breakfast meeting. They're all just getting out of bed, so they'll want lots of caffeine. I've set up a station with orange juice, cream and sugar for coffee, and a buffet server of bacon and scrambled eggs. So if you could keep their mugs filled, that would be a huge help. Oh, and I have a tray of breakfast breads that Mr. Luciano ordered. Would you carry that in for me? I was more than happy to help out. The tray of croissants, muffins, and sweet rolls was bigger and heavier than I'd have imagined. I hoped Trixie wouldn't run underfoot and trip me. Happily, I managed to deliver it without catastrophe. I positioned the goodies near the orange juice. Mr. Luciano stood by the fireplace, speaking softly to Mark, whose gaze continually flicked over to Eva. Gina, the bulldog, sat by Mr. Luciano's feet, calmly taking everything in. Twinkletoes jumped onto the mantel behind Mr. Luciano, but kept a wary eye on Mrs. Muir.
Most of the guys appeared to have dressed in 2 minutes, bothering only to don wrinkled T-shirts and jeans, but Eva was pulled together. A broad lavender hairband pulled her hair back, 60s style. Her top matched the hairband, and her slim cropped trousers accentuated her figure. Two cameramen were waiting to tape the meeting. The chatter stopped when Mr. Luciano began to speak in his deep, godfatherish voice.
"You had a very successful night at the Wagtail Springs Hotel. Mark and I have been going over some of the footage and some amazing EVPs, which astonished us. I think you'll be very pleased."
Lillian Elsner was walking by. She paused and gazed at the collected group in the sitting room.
"Oh, my! Did I hear you say ghosts? They fascinate me. Is this a private group, or may I sit in?"
Mr. Luciano couldn't have been more gracious. With a grand sweep of his hand, he said,
"By all means, Lillian, please join us."
She strode in and settled near Eva. I expected to see orbs on the walls reflecting off her dazzling earrings. An inch in diameter, they looked like balls cut in half and covered with diamonds. As before, large gemstones surrounded by diamonds graced her slender fingers. She plopped a casual designer handbag on her lap. When Glory Bee's head popped out of it, Mrs. Muir yowled her protest, which woke Felix. His head jolted up, and he shouted, "Here!" It didn't appear to upset Glory Bee, though. She gazed around the assembled group with great interest. I poured coffee into Felix's mug. He smiled at me, sat up straight, and self-consciously ran a hand through his mussed hair.
"Mark, would you play the EVP we discussed?" asked Mr. Luciano.
Mark reached forward and pressed a button on a recorder. At first we heard nothing but static. Suddenly, children giggled in the background. A child's voice spoke.
"I'm going to get you."
Eva frowned and sat forward. Everyone started talking at once, but a hush fell over them when Brian rewound it and played it again.
"I'm going to get you."
It wasn't as clear as if someone had spoken into a microphone. The child's voice was in the background with static over it, but even I couldn't mistake what it said. Luciano waited until the talking and high-fiving died down.
"But that's not all. Brian, would you do the honors?"
Brian played a different section. Again, it began with static, but then, underneath the static, a rattling sound emerged. I didn't know what a rattlesnake sounded like, but I'd have backed away from that and fast. Brian replayed it for everyone. He tugged at my sleeve and pointed to his mug. I'd been so entranced that I had forgotten to do my job. Finally, he played one last portion. Like the others, it began with static. The sound of footsteps running could be heard in the background. I'd been there for that one and had heard it with my own ears live when it happened.
"Eva," said Mr. Luciano, "any impressions?"
She spoke with assurance. I could just imagine her in her classroom. "I can't tell you anything until I examine them more closely."
"How about this?"
Mr. Luciano projected a video on the wall. I recognized it immediately. The flashlight that had responded when Brian had asked Hiram to turn it on. We watched, spellbound. Eva snorted. "I'm sorry, Mr. Luciano. I doubt there's a person in this room who isn't familiar with the flashlight trick. Brian is well known for this kind of performance. I've called him on it before." Brian's mouth dropped open, and his hands curled into fists. "What did I ever do to you? Why are you trying so hard to ruin my reputation? This is my career, not some game. No wonder Mark dumped you." Eva sucked in a deep breath. Her eyes opened wide and she stared at Brian in horror. It seemed like time stopped in those seconds of painful silence. Mark jumped to his feet.
"Hey, wait a minute. Don't go talking about things you don't know about."
Felix's eyes darted back and forth between Mark and Brian. "Now, come on, guys.
Brian, apologize to Eva. She's just doing her job.
I notice she's not putting you down. Only me. It's always only me. You better beware Felix. I'm sure you're next on her list of lives to ruin, like she has mine and Mallory's.
Mr. Luciano finally stepped in.
Just a moment. Let's not get heated. I believe you've overstepped, Brian. Felix is right. I hired Eva to do exactly this. She's only analyzing the results.
Yeah? Is that what she's doing? Well, try this on for size. There was a witness when Mallory died. I saw you, Eva. Yep, with my own two eyes. You can't disprove that.
Brian pointed at her with a pudgy forefinger.
I saw you sneaking back into the inn the night Mallory died. Try to dodge that truth. Not quite as easy as poo-pooing ghosts, is it?
Eva seemed almost breathless.
I was not sneaking.
Brian didn't try to hide his joy.
So you admit it! Then you won't mind telling us what you were doing outside in the middle of the night.
Eva raised her chin. Perhaps you could enlighten us. What exactly were you doing outside? 19.
I couldn't sleep, so I went for a walk.
Brian spoke smugly, as though he wasn't concerned by the implication that he might have had something to do with Mallory's death. Eva's eyes narrowed with suspicion. I don't suppose you happened to meet Mallory during this walk? Brian leveled a wicked look at Eva.
Mallory is gone. You can pretend you don't believe in ghosts all you want, but that won't stop Mallory from coming back for you. Just like Becca, Hiram, and Obadiah can't find peace.
He leaned forward.
Mallory is looking for you.
They say emotions travel up and down the leash, meaning that your dog knows if you're tense or afraid. But I had no idea it worked that way for cats, too. In the instant that Brian stood up menacingly, Mrs. Muir leaped onto his shoulder and clung to him. Brian howled and turned in a frantic circle, trying to knock the cat off. But Mrs. Muir sank her claws in deeper and held on like she was riding a bucking bronco. If the implications of what they had confessed hadn't been so dire, the ensuing chaos might have been very funny. Brian turning and turning, Eva and Mr. Luciano reaching for Mrs. Muir. Mark and Felix trying to help but getting in the way as the other three rotated. Casper, Gina, Trixie, and Glory Bee barking underfoot. In the blink of an eye, Mrs. Muir flew off Brian's shoulder, landed squarely on her feet, and took off down the corridor with Twinkletoes in hot pursuit. The dogs couldn't resist a good chase, and they raced behind the cats. Brian wiped his shoulder. When he turned his fingers up, I saw a tiny smear of blood. He eyed Eva.
Bring it on now, devil woman. One more word criticizing me, and I'll sue.
Calm down, Brian. Felix stood on tiptoe to see Brian's shoulder. It's just a cat scratch.
Yeah, haven't you ever heard of cat scratch fever?
He turned menacingly toward Eva.
You better watch yourself.
He sucked in a deep breath, squared his shoulders, and said quite calmly,
Felix Holly, I'd like to speak with you, please.
Felix and I followed Brian outside onto the porch.
Did the camera get that? See, I'm not really a jerk, Holly. Well, okay, sometimes I can be, but that's just because I can be stupid. But I'm not being stupid or a jerk right now.
I tried to follow his rambling, which seemed to be a disclaimer of some sort. Felix gave him a dirty look.
You were a little hard on Eva, don't you think?
Brian slapped him on the back.
You won't feel that way when the ratings come in.
So you're not really angry? I asked.
Oh, I'm plenty angry.
He sucked in air noisily.
Eva acts so superior, like she's some kind of genius, when she's the dope because she can't open her mind enough to see that ghosts exist. What I said was the truth. She really was outside the other night, and she sure hated Mallory.
I walked inside, much relieved that Brian had been putting on a show. I wondered if Eva knew that. I helped Shelley clean up,
expecting the dogs to return. When they didn't, I found them at the reception desk, where Zelda was using her psychic skills on them. Felix looked on in delighted amazement. I wondered if he really believed she could read their minds, or if he just thought it was a cute gag. Zelda offered them tiny treats, and Trixie nearly knocked Little Glory Bee over in her eagerness. I hurried to correct her. "Sit, Trixie, we don't jump like that." Her little bottom barely grazed the floor in compliance before Zelda laughed and gave her a tiny corner of a biscuit. Casper sat properly and raised a paw for his treat.
"That's a good ghost," Zelda cooed at Casper.
A whirlwind rushed above us. Visible through the wrought iron railing on the balcony, Mrs. Muir and Twinkletoes faced each other in a classic cat standoff. Zelda handed me Mrs. Muir's leash.
I took it off so she wouldn't get tangled on anything, and I put a Sugar Maple Inn GPS collar on her.
I sighed. Now she would be that much more difficult to catch. As though she read my mind, Zelda added,
"Let her have her fun. Mrs. Muir loves racing around with Twinkletoes. She says she never gets to play with other cats at home. She's not interested in going outside. She just wants to play."
"They don't look like they're having fun. They look like they're going to scratch and bite each other."
"They're fine," Zelda insisted. "They're batting around a turquoise mouse."
Zelda lowered her voice.
"But Mrs. Muir is very concerned about Eva. She says she's never seen Eva so upset."
A dreamy look came over Felix. He tilted his head and stared at Zelda with open fascination. I never knew quite how to respond to Zelda's pronouncements about what animals were thinking. I didn't really believe that Zelda could read their minds or communicate with them. But she had an annoying habit of being correct. Of course, it didn't take a psychic to know that Eva was stressed out. I'm a little worried about Eva, too. Make sure it's okay with her for Mrs. Muir to have the run of the inn, okay? Zelda's eyes shifted toward Felix. She gave him a little nudge and cocked her head toward me.
"Oh," Felix straightened up. "Would you be able to show Grayson and me the way to your aunt's house this afternoon?"
I'd forgotten all about Aunt Birdie.
"Why don't I just draw you a map?"
Felix and Zelda shared a look and laughed like they had a private joke. Felix cleared his throat. I believe her exact words were, "And bring my heartless niece with you, or I won't open the door." Leave it to Birdie to extend a gracious invitation. Felix and I left Trixie and Casper in Zelda's care. Wagtail might be pet-friendly, but I didn't have to ask to know that Aunt Birdie's home was off-limits to furry creatures. Felix, Grayson, and I set off for her house, stopping briefly at Bobone Pen, which Oma had recommended for baked goods. The clerk recognized Grayson from his previous reality TV show. Giggling like a schoolgirl with a crush, she asked him to autograph a bakery bag. He rose to the occasion, cleverly writing, "The best buns in town, Grayson Gatewood." He even posed for selfies destined for Facebook. Felix tapped his watch. "Grayson, Aunt Birdie is waiting." Grayson followed us out the door, but turned to wave to his fans and sighed. "Wow, does that happen to you a lot?" I asked. Felix laughed. "All the time. Makes me feel like the Invisible Man when I'm with him." Grayson grinned. "Wait until the apparition apprehenders are on TV. You'll get just as much attention." "Eva didn't want to come along?" I asked. "She's back at the inn going over the EVPs," said Felix. "Those were amazing," said Grayson. "Mark said he had never heard anything so clear. The owners ought to promote the place as a haunted hotel. Bet they'd do a big business. Who owns it?" Felix sniffed the muffins. "Mark said it's a funny little guy named Wiggins. Think Birdie would be offended if we ate some of the muffins on the way?" I pretended to whisk them out of his reach to protect them. Not that I blamed him. The aroma was mouth-watering. We marched bravely up the walk to her home.
Aunt Bertie answered the door, dressed for a business meeting. A prim white blouse peeked out the front of a red suit. Giant mauve pearl earrings flanked her face, which bore such an inhospitable expression that I immediately felt like a child who had been caught misbehaving. I quickly introduced Felix and Grayson. "We brought muffins. I hope you like them. They smell heavenly." She thanked us politely and invited us inside. She peeked in the basket.
"Store-bought," she sniffed. "You couldn't bake something to bring to your only aunt."
Felix glanced at me with wide eyes. "Holly hasn't had much time. We're keeping her very busy."
"Are you? How refreshingly chivalrous of you to come to her defense."
I meant to let it slide, really I did, but under my breath I muttered, "And you're not my only aunt."
"So, Mrs. Dupuis,"
Felix said hastily, shooting me an annoyed look, "why do you think you have ghosts?"
"Miss, it's Miss Dupuis, and I don't think I have ghosts. I know I have them because I have seen them. I expect they'll be making an appearance now that Holly is in the house."
"And why would that be?" asked Felix.
"She hasn't been here in years. My only living relative can't be bothered to visit."
It took all my willpower not to point out that she knew very well that my mother, her sister, was very much alive and well and living in California, not to mention their parents and my half-siblings. They were, however, wise enough to reside an entire country away from her. Aunt Bertie must have thought my silence gave her license to continue in that vein.
"But everything will be different now that she's living here. We'll have dinner together on Saturday nights, and Holly will take over care of the family graves at Wagtail Cemetery. I go there every Sunday after services, and I expect to see seasonal arrangements on the graves. See that you take care of that today, Holly."
I closed my eyes for a few seconds. How to handle this?
"Don't look like that. I've taken care of those graves for as long as I can remember. It's time your generation took responsibility for our ancestors."
To be honest, I had never given their graves a single thought. With the sole exception of my grandfather, Oma's husband, all my grandparents were still alive. A flash of shame rolled over me. I sucked in a deep breath of air. Flowers at the cemetery didn't sound too terrible. After all, they deserved to be remembered nicely. "I'll be glad to do that, Aunt Bertie, but I don't know what my schedule will be like yet, so we'll have to see about dinners on Saturdays." She looked like I had slapped her. I swear the hollows under her prominent cheekbones grew deeper. Felix jumped in. "Where do you see these apparitions, Ms. Dupuis? Perhaps you could show us and tell us a little bit more about the circumstances."
"What a nice young man you are. Married?"
Felix sputtered.
"No." "Isn't that lucky? My niece, my only living relative on this earth, is single too."
Felix and Grayson both looked back at me as Bertie led us through her home. I rolled my eyes, held up my palms, and shrugged. Fortunately, they both grinned. I wasn't used to living near relatives. Up to now, I had done pretty much as I pleased, when I pleased. I hoped I could work something out with Bertie eventually. Living in dread of seeing her might be worse than catering to her once in a while.
"Right here," she fingered her hair. "This has always been the sitting room. My house has been in the family for 4 generations. Holly will inherit it one day."
She gazed at Felix. "Did you hear that?
Holly will be an heiress."
It was all I could do not to snort. "Heiress? Hardly." Her sitting room surprised me, though. Definitely not modern, but not the stuffy, uncomfortable, Victorian-type room I remembered from my childhood. Elaborate, yet tasteful floral curtains with a bold yellow background swagged across the windows. pale yellow walls provided a backdrop for what appeared to be family portraits, including one of my mother as a child, holding a cocker spaniel. A window seat bore bright blue cushions, and a love seat was clad in the same cheerful fabric as the curtains. A Ouija board sat on a rather modern Ottoman-style table that was clad in a coordinating yellow and white lattice print. Two additional chairs did seem a bit older and stuffier in style, but their faded blue fabric bore faint yellow roses that suited the room. A small table between them held an aged book. I felt a little bit ashamed, actually. I had never given any thought to Aunt Bertie's financial situation. What did she live off of? This wasn't the time to ask. Oma would surely know.
Miss Dupuy, said Felix, you haven't been playing with that Ouija board, have you?
You ask that as though it were a bad thing, young man. Felix shook his head.
You really shouldn't do that, Miss Dupuy. You don't know who you'll get with a Ouija board. You could accidentally open the door to dark spirits.
He sounded so earnest. It was really very sweet. Bertie rambled on about my great-great-grandparents and how she sometimes heard sounds at night in the sitting room. Oh, here's Elma now. I gazed around the room. I didn't see anyone, not even a mist or an orb.
Miss Dupuy, are you by any chance a sensitive?
Aunt Bertie beamed.
Yes, Felix. I have seen ghosts since I was a child. Don't you see Elma? It's over there by the table with the book.
We turned to look in that direction, and for absolutely no reason, the book flew to the floor. 20. I gasped and scanned the area. None of us were anywhere near close enough to have influenced the book. It hadn't slid down. It hadn't fallen off. It had flown about 3 feet as though it had been tossed.
Now, Elma, don't be upset. I'm sure they appreciated your effort to move the book.
Aunt Bertie smiled at us. Your great-great-grandfather always was a rascal. He hates it when people can't see him. He was a lawyer, and you know how they like to be the center of attention.
Uh-oh. Either Aunt Bertie had lost her marbles, or she was as bad as Brian. Did she know how to rig a book so it would fly off a table?
I stood perfectly still. I didn't feel anything moving. No motors or anything that might have jiggled the book. I eyed the little table. Could it be at a slant? Grayson could hardly contain himself.
Oh, man, that was so cool. We have to come back at night. Would that be okay? Maybe we could shoot a second episode of the TV show? What do you think, Felix? We have to talk with Luciano.
Mr. Luciano? Asked Aunt Bertie. A rather distinguished gentleman, snappy dresser, has a bulldog.
Well. Aunt Bertie certainly had noticed Mr. Luciano about town. Maybe I could introduce them, and Bertie would focus her energy on Luciano instead of me. Only a month ago, Bertie, Oma, and Rose had tried to set me up. I shuddered at the memory. None of their attempts went very well, and it had been horribly embarrassing. Yet here I was thinking about doing the very same thing. I consoled myself by imagining it might be genetic. I pulled myself together, picked the book up off the floor, and examined it. Bound in worn red leather with fancy scrolls that showed wear from age, the cover had been embossed with the names Elmer and Lisette Dupuy. I turned it over. No signs of wires or anything that might have launched it from the table. My eyes met Felix's. He mashed his lips together, then said, "Just like in the castle." Bertie frowned at us.
"I suppose that's Elmer's way of telling me it's time I passed his journal on to you, Holly."
"It's not terribly interesting. Elmer was a decent but excruciatingly boring man. Still, he kept records. Lizette drew some sketches and stashed a few family photographs in it. I have a few other items to pass along to you as well.
The second Bertie left the room, Felix and Grayson descended on the book and examined the table. I watched them, but they didn't come up with any cogent explanations for the flying book either. Aunt Bertie bustled into the room, carrying a stack of ancient books. She handed them to me.
Take good care of these. They are the history of your family. If it weren't for me, we wouldn't have anything to hand on.
Thank you, Aunt Bertie. Why did I have a funny suspicion she was really cleaning her house? No matter, I was glad to have them, and I would hand them on eventually, too. Maybe sooner than she thought, if I could dump them on my half-siblings.
Now then, about Mr. Luciano and your TV show.
Bertie stopped and turned to me.
Well, what are you still doing here?
I beg your pardon? What was she upset about now?
The flowers for their graves.
Didn't you hear what I said? I want fresh flowers on those graves tonight when people visit the cemetery.
I will not have anyone thinking that the Dupuis don't honor their dead.
Hadn't she claimed my presence would bring out the spirits? But any excuse to leave sounded good to me. I'll take care of it immediately. See you later. I was hightailing it for the front door when it dawned on me that she would hate whatever I chose. I dashed back to the sitting room. Excuse me. Sorry to interrupt. Which florist do you prefer, Aunt Bertie? Her bitter expression changed for once. Evidently, she was thrilled that I had asked her advice. I made a mental note that she liked being asked for her opinion. Even if I didn't follow her suggestions, it might be beneficial to ask for guidance once in a while.
Catnip and bark, she said.
I waved and left so fast that my tailwind probably blew the ghosts out of the premises. It was a gorgeous fall day. The nip in the air was as crisp as a ripe apple. I longed to be outside, but I hurried back to the inn, afraid to be away too long when I should be working. I needn't have been concerned. Zelda, Oma, and Rose were chatting in Oma's office over tea and coffee. The sun shone through the French doors. Twinkletoes and Mrs. Muir had stretched out in a sunbeam and didn't even twitch an ear when I entered. Trixie and Casper jumped to their feet and greeted me like they hadn't seen me in years. I deposited the handful of books on the desk and squatted to pet the dogs. While the dogs were happy, Oma, Rose, and Zelda wore worried expressions.
What happened? Why so glum?
Oma's lips drew tight.
Officer Dave paid Zelda a visit.
Zelda cringed and bit into an eclair. I guessed it had to happen sooner or later. Zelda swallowed hard.
He was asking questions about the night Mallory died.
She waved her forefinger as she spoke.
I knew she didn't drown by accident. I've been in that bath. It's like a big kiddie pool. There are deeper public fountains everywhere.
Rose shot Oma a fearful look.
It was an accident. Why won't Dave accept that?
She glared at me.
You too, Holly. Why can't the two of you concede that Mallory drowned on her own, without help from anyone else?
I could feel the color rising in my face. What if Holmes drowned in less than 2 feet of water in Chicago, and they wrote off his death as an accident?
Don't be ridiculous. That would never happen. And if it did, I'd be right there in a flash, demanding to know what had...
Rose's voice faded.
Happened.
Mallory was an orphan. I just let it hang there in the air.
Now you're making me feel terrible. But that doesn't mean it wasn't an accident.
I trust Doc.
At least Rose wasn't glaring at me anymore. I eyed the selection of pastries on the table, took a seat, and poured myself a mug of coffee, doctoring it with milk and sugar. Trixie edged toward me, watching my every move, no doubt hoping for a terrible accident that would land the entire pastry tray on the floor.
Officer Dave had the nerve to imply that I killed her out of jealousy because she was flirting with Felix. I was afraid of this. He thinks I killed Mallory, said Zelda.
I nearly dropped my coffee mug. Mallory's outrageous attention to Felix hadn't escaped anyone's notice. But to imagine that Zelda would be so angry that she would murder? Dave had gone too far. I recognized that he had to consider all the possibilities, but that seemed over the top to me. Zelda lived with a clowder of cats. I didn't imagine they would provide an alibi for her. I don't suppose you contacted anyone or sent any emails when you got home?
It was past 2:30 in the morning.
Zelda put down her eclair.
I know Felix didn't kill her. He's much too kind. I mean, think about it. He's the only one of them who bothered to walk us home.
You girls stop that now, said Rose.
Doc is so upset with Dave for undermining him. And you too, Holly. You and Dave aren't helping things by running around town asking questions that imply Mallory was murdered.
I understand that Dave would like to do something more exciting than look for a lost dog, but honestly, you're making people think something worse happened than is the case.
I looked to Omar, who nodded in agreement.
Doc was very clear. There is no evidence of anything criminal.
It's disrespectful, too, said Rose. Dave is a sweet boy, but Doc has decades of experience that shouldn't simply be disregarded. Of course he knows more about these things than Dave.
Like Zelda, I bit into an eclair. I happened to agree with Dave, and Rose's little lecture didn't change that. But I knew when to keep quiet. I would have to be more discreet in the future.
How did the visit with Bertie go? Asked Omar.
As well as can be expected.
Omar, what does Bertie do to make a living?
A number of things. She's an appraiser. Quite well respected from what I understand.
Real estate?
No, things. Objets d'art. Crystal, historical documents, jewelry, old books, old gadgets.
She writes columns for a few fancy magazines about that sort of thing, said Rose. She used to transcribe manuscripts for a local writer before computers took over.
I'm to take flowers to the graves of my ancestors.
That doesn't sound so bad, said Omar.
I love Wagtail Cemetery, cooed Zelda. It's like taking a step back in time. Except for the addition of new graves, I bet the church and cemetery haven't changed a bit in a century.
I glanced at her doubtfully.
What? Asked Zelda. A lot of people like graveyards. Wagtails is so cool and old-fashioned.
Rose asked, You are coming to the graveyard party tonight?
Ew, isn't that a little bit macabre? I asked.
Omar groaned.
Loosen up, Liebling. It's all in good fun.
I believe Liesl is right. When did you become such a stick-in-the-mud, Holly? Asked Rose.
Now, just a minute. I like fun as much as anyone else. But isn't it a little bit disrespectful to party in a cemetery?
It's all the rage, raved Zelda.
Celebrations at cemeteries are nothing new, said Rose. Years ago, people gathered at cemeteries for special occasions. They even took picnics. On some days, the whole town turned out to clean up the cemetery. I think it's wonderful that people take an interest in our cemetery. If it happens to be because of Halloween, well, that's just fine.
Zelda laughed. And if a few ghosts show up, all the better.
Holmes will be there.
Rose shot a coy glance my way.
Holmes is engaged. Don't you start that again.
I hurried to change the subject. So what's going on here? Seems awfully quiet.
Zelda grinned. No one checking in or out. Not even many questions.
just a bunch of handsome ghost hunters running around. You can spend some time unpacking. I hear your apartment is quite the mess. Oma didn't say it in a critical way, thank goodness. Now, how would you know? It came to me as I spoke. Mr. Huckle. I think he banged into some boxes. Since it's such a beautiful day, I think I'll take the dogs for a walk. We can deliver the flowers to the cemetery and get it out of the way so Bertie won't complain about it. But at that moment, Oma gasped, looking as though she'd seen a ghost. 21. I wondered where everyone was. We all swung around. My old boyfriend, Ben Hathaway, loped through the doorway. His dimples flashed when he smiled at me. He would fit right in with the ghost hunters. He wore classic nerd glasses, with frames that were dark at the top and clear at the bottom. In spite of his studious appearance, he was actually fairly good-looking. He parted his dark brown hair on the right side and wore it short. But like Holmes's fiancée, he was a city person, hopelessly out of place in Wagtail. Gingersnap wagged her tail and kissed his hand, which he promptly yanked out of her reach. Trixie backed away from him. She had no reason to do that. Well, other than the fact that he thought I shouldn't have kept her. But she couldn't know that, could she? Ben, I jumped up. What are you doing here? He held up a hand in greeting to the others. Hello. I had to drive up here for business. I would have been suspicious, but his very wealthy boss happened to have a fishing cabin in Wagtail. It wasn't out of the realm of possibilities that Ben really did come to work. I hustled him out to the reception desk. Where are you staying? The dimples made another appearance. Here? He said it with such cheery assurance that I thought he must believe he had a reservation. But we're booked. I didn't think I had to pay for a room. I figured I'd bunk with you. Oy, my head spun. Ben, we broke up. Not really. Yes, really. I packed up my life and moved here, remember? Two creases formed between his eyebrows as though he was perplexed. You make a move sound so final. And anyway, we're still friends, right? Oh, boy. I had never considered anything like this. Why hadn't he called? Well, I guess so. It wasn't as though we ended our relationship in a big snit. And I did have a spare bedroom in my apartment. Okay, you can stay, but I have to warn you that I haven't unpacked yet. I handed him a spare key to my quarters. Ben wrinkled his nose. You've been here for days. What have you been doing? Thanks, Ben, I said sarcastically. He had just helped me remember why we broke off our relationship. I ignored the confused look on his face, but I wondered how he knew when I had moved. Did you go by my house? He flushed red. Your tenant was moving in. Served him right. I hope it shocked him to realize that I was gone. Let me grab some books. I hustled into Oma's office and hissed. Did you have anything to do with this? Oma clutched her forehead with one hand. Not the Ben again. Don't call him that, I whispered. Ben, just Ben, not the Ben. Yeah. How long does he have to stay? Zelda grinned. I'd forgotten how cute he is. Ach, Zelda, do not encourage her. I grabbed the books Aunt Bertie had given me and bustled out to Ben. Follow me. When I unlocked the door to the apartment, Trixie, Twinkletoes, Casper, and Mrs. Muir were waiting inside. They must have used the pet doors to scramble up the hidden stairway. Not one of them ran to Ben. Trixie pulled her ears back and watched with worried eyes. Twinkletoes sat on top of the tallest packing box, looking quite regal with her black tail wrapped around her white front paws. I hadn't known that sweet face could be so aloof and superior. Mrs. Muir looked on, the turquoise mouse at her feet.
Casper must have picked up on Trixie's concern, because even he wore an unhappy expression.
Good grief, Holly! How many animals do you have? I thought there were only two.
The other two are guests of the inn. I deposited the books on a bookshelf near the fireplace and showed Ben to the extra bedroom.
This is much better. I can deal with this. Lucky you didn't let that mess migrate into this room, huh?
I bristled. Look, Ben, I'm not going to apologize. I moved a couple of days ago, and it's been busy around here. Besides, it's not like I was expecting company, you know?
It's a good thing I came. I can unpack your stuff while I'm here.
I had to stop myself from screaming, "No, no, no!" Why was I so testy with Ben? He hadn't done anything. Okay, so maybe he'd been critical, but I could take that. Oh, but he hadn't done anything. He hadn't called. He hadn't given me a hand with packing or moving. He hadn't shown up to say goodbye. And now he appeared like he thought he was a white knight riding to the rescue on his steed. I took a deep breath and exhaled. No thanks. This is my home. I'd rather not have to call you when I can't find my belongings.
Of course. How can you stand to live in this mess?
Why aren't you staying at your boss's cabin?
Oops. That certainly sounded rude. He didn't seem to notice, though.
He rents it out. Apparently all of Wagtail is sold out right now. For Halloween, I guess? I saw the big sign when I rode into town.
Road? Had he really said road? I must be imagining things.
I need to take care of a little chore. Make yourself at home. There are drinks and snacks in the fridge.
I think I'll go with you, at least downstairs. Your pack doesn't appear very friendly.
I turned to find the two dogs and two cats sitting in a perfectly straight line just outside the door. There was no growling or hissing, but even Ben hadn't missed their wariness.
"Don't be so worried, guys," I said to them.
"Okay, you don't think they'll bite, do you?" Ben evidently thought I had directed my assurance to him.
"They can tell you don't like them."
Good grief, now I sounded like Zelda.
"Get whatever you need and let's go."
"What's the big rush? I thought you moved here for the quiet life."
He followed me into the sitting room. "There's a celebration at the cemetery tonight, and I need to take some flower arrangements over before my Aunt Bertie throws a conniption fit."
"Ugh, there's a charming chore. Is it a memorial for the girl who was murdered?"
"How did you know about that?"
"Gosh, Holly, I read the newspapers, you know."
I didn't imagine for one minute that any of his highbrow newspapers had picked up on the story of Mallory's death.
"No, it's a Halloween thing."
"What is this?" asked Ben.
He held out the oddball that Trixie had found at the Wagtail Springs Hotel. Not a clue. Trixie was carrying it around.
"It's kind of cool. Look, the stem that juts out is concave, so it sticks to things."
He popped it on his forehead.
It wasn't the first time he'd done something childish and fun, but it always surprised me when it happened because it was so unlike him.
"Can I have it?" he asked.
"If it's okay with Trixie."
He leveled a worried look at me.
"Holly, she's a dog. Her brain is the size of a walnut."
"Oh, I think she'll know."
As if to prove it, she jumped high in the air as if she intended to snatch it off of Ben's forehead.
"She's attacking me," he stumbled backward.
"She's playing with you. You have her toy."
"Yeah?"
He plucked it off his forehead and pitched it across the room. Trixie ran for it and played coy when he tried to retrieve it.
"Some weird dog toy," he said.
Before leaving the inn, I checked to be sure Gingersnap, Trixie, and Casper were wearing Sugar Maple Inn collars, so we could track them if they managed to take off. I latched leashes onto them and set out on a leisurely stroll in the perfect weather. Ben chatted about his boss and people we knew.
He acted as though nothing had happened between us. It was sufficiently comfortable, and I soon found myself laughing with him. We quickly found catnip and bark. Tiers of bright flowers surrounded the front of the store, making it hard to mistake it for anything else. Ben peeled off to pursue whatever he came for, and I entered the shop with the dogs. When I explained to the proprietor that I wanted exactly what Bertie Dupuy always ordered for the family graves, he clapped his hands and said, "You must be Holly. I'm pleased to see that you take after your grandmother's side of the family." Although he didn't come right out and say he was glad I wasn't like Bertie, I could read between the lines and grasped the implication. "I've been expecting Bertie, so everything is ready. She's rather impatient and never phones ahead. Apparently, I'll be doing this from now on, so go right on making the arrangements just as she likes them, and I'll drop by to pay for them and pick them up." He nodded. "Sounds like a plan, and I don't mind telling you, I won't be sorry to see your smiling face instead of the cantankerous Bertie." He disappeared to the back for a few minutes and returned pulling a giant wagon filled with flowers. What's this? I had stupidly imagined there would be two or three little vases or bouquets.
"Bertie's standard order."
I thanked him, looped the three leash handles over one hand, and pulled the wagon with the other. The dogs walked like a team, three abreast, as though they had known each other forever. 6 blocks later, I spied the cemetery across one of the main roads that ran along the outskirts of town. I dragged the wagon across the street and up the sidewalk that led to the charming old chapel. The white building with a steep slate roof could have been in a children's picture book. Arched stained glass windows flanked the front door. A round stained glass window adorned the pitch just under the roof, and a small steeple acted as a bell tower. I remembered the bells ringing on Christmases before my family moved away. Giant pine trees flanked the church, and dark woods provided a quiet backdrop behind it. The cemetery was less appealing. An old black iron fence bearing decorative spikes on top surrounded it. No one had raked the leaves recently. The gravestones varied from tall and notable pillars to some so small they were little more than the size of a book. Seemingly out of nowhere, a dark cloud covered the sun. The day grew chilly and a wind kicked up. Leaves flew through the air like whispers. If Brian were here, he would surely tell me spirits were present. The dogs lifted their noses to sniff the scents, and without warning, Trixie barked. I eyed the dense woods behind the church and cemetery. I didn't see anyone or anything unusual. She probably smelled possums or squirrels. Casper appeared to be on alert. His tail was perpendicular to the ground, and his nose was quivering. I turned my attention to the mass of flowers and lifted the first arrangement out of the cart. Golden sunflowers and chrysanthemums melded with pumpkin orange lilies, purple liatris spikes, and stunning gaillardia with their deep rust centers and bright yellow edges. I'd played my hand wrong with Bertie after all, because I had no idea where the graves were, nor had I realized there would be so many arrangements. From now on, maybe we would make this our little get-together. I could pull the wagon for her, and she could count this as time spent with me. Maybe that would get me out of unpleasant Saturday night dinners. I gazed at the grim cemetery. I didn't believe in ghosts, so why did it creep me out? The specter of death, I supposed. Sucking in a deep breath of air, I entered the ancient gate with the dogs leading the way. "To the Dupuy graves, please, puppies." They charged ahead, sniffing the ground. Okay, how hard could this be? I just had to look for graves with the name Dupuy. I concentrated on the names engraved on tombstones. Richardson, Claude Felter, Pierce, Quinlan, I recognized the names of local families as I walked. No Dupuis yet. A fierce wind blew, whipping my hair into my face. It howled through the nearly leafless trees in the cemetery. I paused, trying to wipe my hair out of my face with my arm, when Trixie and Casper pulled away from me and ran, their leashes flying through the air behind them. Gingersnap wagged her tail and gazed up at me as though she wanted to run and have fun, too. Not a chance. I grabbed her leash. No, I screamed. No! That was probably the wrong command in 100 different ways. Come, Trixie! Who was I kidding? She hadn't been to training yet. Maybe Casper had. It was bad enough to lose my own dog, but someone else's? That was a nightmare. Come, Casper. Casper, come. He paid me no attention at all. The dogs had stopped in the back corner of the cemetery. They pawed and sniffed and dodged in circles. Relief flooded over me. The fence. They couldn't go any farther. I let Gingersnap join them and promptly found Elmer's grave. I set the arrangement down. I hope you like these. They're gorgeous. I fetched the other arrangements and closed the gate behind me, lest the dogs lose interest in the back corner. It wasn't until I had placed flowers on the third grave that I realized I had said something to each of my ancestors. Only half an hour ago, I had sounded like Zelda. Now I'm as loony as Aunt Bertie. I shook my head and used both hands to clear wind-blown strands of hair out of my face. Oh, this is ridiculous. There's no reason to feel jittery or uneasy. It's just wind, and there are no such things as ghosts. Leaves blew around me with such force that I felt certain Brian would have insisted the spirits were complaining about what I had said. The dogs were still barking in the corner of the cemetery. I made my way toward them, pausing to see who warranted the ornate obelisk. Swags of roses had been cut into the top. Beneath them, perfect folds of fabric had been carved into the stone, ending in ornate stone tassels. I peered at the name, Dr. Ira Wraith. His wife and son's epitaphs appeared there as well. The sun broke through the clouds, turning the giant cherub beside it golden. It was every bit as ornate as the obelisk. The chubby angel held one foot in the air behind him as though held aloft by his finely detailed wings. A wrap looped around his legs and carved flowers cascaded down the pedestal on which he stood. Rebecca Wraith. I was surprised that she hadn't been buried with the rest of her family. Furious barking broke my concentration. I jogged among the headstones and nabbed the three leashes. All right, hush, enough barking. They weren't interested in the grave as I'd thought. They aimed their noses toward the woods outside of the fence. Moss grew on two plain tombstones that sat next to each other outside of the cemetery. I craned my neck to see the names. Dr. Hiram Montague and Obadiah Bagley. I stepped back, shocked. They had been ostracized. The people of Wagtail